The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
The Chicago Bears lose at home again, falling 33-22 to the San Francisco 49ers as their record drops to 3-5. I bring on Bear Report's Andrew Freeman to talk through the game with me on this episode of Bear With Me. What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to Bear With Me, a Chicago Bears podcast hosted by yours truly, Robert Schmitz, right here on the Windy City Gridiron podcasting channel. And I'm glad to be back because I sounded like Jabba the Hutt last week, so sick that I couldn't go through a Tampa Bay game that only made me sicker. But here I am with Bear Report's Andrew Freeman to talk through a game against the 49ers that we don't have to pretend it was good, but at least it had more positives than the Tampa Bay game. Maybe not in the short term, because certainly, like somebody said in the comments section, it's one thing to get smoked by the defending champs. It's another thing to lose at home to a 2-4 team with injuries all over the roster, but at least there was some entertainment value. I mean, I certainly thought Justin Fields played well, but I don't want to steal your thunder. Andrew, how are you? What did you think of the game?
Yeah, doing good this week, man. You know, like you said, a lot more palatable of a viewing experience than last week. Certainly a lot more positives on the offensive side of the ball with Justin Fields. But, you know, happy Halloween, man. Thanks for having me on today. And, yeah, I mean, really excited to talk about this game because, you know, like you said, short term, it sucks that the Bears lost in a game that I thought was very winnable on the schedule. Like, I had them winning this game. You know, I thought it'd be a lot more low scoring of a game. That's for sure. But, you know, the offense looks a lot better today, and that's because we saw a lot more positives from Justin Fields, who, you know, after a disaster last week, he looked pretty good today. And that's got to feel good for Bears fans.
Absolutely. Now, I'll give you the decision. We could have probably talked about this pre-show, but we didn't. So I'm just going to ask you straight out. Do you want to start with Justin Fields, or do you want to save that until after the sponsorship break and just go after all the defensive discussion that you know we have to talk about, like, up front? What do you want to do?
Let's get the positive out of the way right now. I want to delay the inevitable as long as possible. We're going to do a Ryan Pace here. We're going to delay the inevitable as long as possible.
We're going to
kick the can down the road. we're going to go after our guy right here. We're going to talk about some Justin Fields. So I'd say let's do that.
Go for it. And to start us off, what'd you think?
All right. So, yeah, it was, again, you can nitpick a couple of plays here and there. We were talking about this a little bit pre-show. You know, a couple of throws that he threw high over the middle of the field that he probably wants to have back in this one. But, you know, the positives here in terms of the play extension ability, you know, some of the throws he made, that one throw he made to Jesse James in the end zone was just, I don't know if you saw the end zone angle of that, but I mean, to throw it off platform like that across his body with a tight window with the defender right there, like hands extended, like that was just beautiful. And then the touchdown run he had was – I was laughing the entire time. Like it was hilarious, like how good he looked on the field. Like he looked like a man amongst boys, like just – it looked like the adult who's playing in the kids like two-hand touch football game, and the kids just can't get a hand on him because he's just faster, bigger, and stronger than all of them. And it's just it was so fun to watch. Like, so the flashes were definitely there in this one, and he was a lot more consistent. Like, he was getting the ball out on time, he was much more efficient in the quick game. We didn't see many of the plays down the field that we've seen in previous weeks, especially that Lions game, but you know, I expect those to be there in time. This offense, you know, they just don't have, I think, the weapons to make that work right now. They don't have the offensive line, certainly, to make that work right now. But there were so many good things from Justin Fields in this game. And this is a game that he needed, because that game he had last week, you know, we were talking pre-game show how, you know, you wanted to give him a pass on a lot of that because, you know, you're right, because they're realistically, most rookie quarterbacks weren't going to be successful in that situation. Like, the offensive line was bad in that one, with when Lechavius Simmons was out there, I should say. Yeah, bad is a word for it. We'll go with that for now. The receivers, the game plan, like, nothing was working for that one. And this one, you know, there was just, he had a better chance to succeed, but he also, again, there were also instances where he had to put the team on his back in this one to get the job done, and he did that. So I can't say enough good things from Justin Fields' performance. This was what, again, this is what he needed, because, you know, the Cleveland game was bad. The Buccaneers' game was bad. It feels like the Bears' offense have been trying to hide him as much as possible rather than just letting him do his thing. And we got instances of that late in this game as well, where I feel like they stuck with the run a little bit too long in the second half. But all in all, man, there were just too many good stuff out there from Justin Fields today. Like, short term, again, it sucks that they lost the game, but, you know, from a larger point of view, long-term speaking, this is exactly the game that we needed to see to feel like Justin Fields is heading in the right direction.
Right. I mean, it's a bad loss from the team's perspective. Defense didn't play well. The fact that Nagy missed the game and they looked a little bit more organized but still lost to a team that's 2-4, not good. But let's table that, because I'm with you. I mean, I don't expect every Bear With Me viewer to have followed all of my different breakdown streams, and that's totally fine. So I'll tell you where I was feeling coming into this game. I felt like over the next three games, where, if you didn't know, Justin Fields' first five games of relatively intense action, which is a qualifier so that I can include the Cincinnati game, have come against defenses that are top 10 in pressure rate, which, if you think about pressure rate, which goes directly against Justin Fields' tendency to hold on to the ball, that is a bad matchup. And coming into this game, they were going up against a 49er defense that I think was 13th overall, so slightly above average, but more importantly, they were 29th in generating pressure, which is a little wild when you think about a team with D Ford, who was hurt, and Nick Bosa, who's awesome, but that's where the numbers were. So I came into this game and the Pittsburgh game, because they're not good at generating pressure either, and the Lions game after that, thinking, we have got to get our Justin Fields breakout game eventually, or we're lying to ourselves. Like, I understand what I'm seeing on film, but it would be way less realistic to be positive about a quarterback that doesn't play well against the Niners, or doesn't play well, and doesn't play well against Pittsburgh, and then maybe he does something decent against the Lions, and still try to sell myself that, you know, in year two, he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. Well, today, we saw Justin Fields look good, and I would tell you that I thought his true deep ball, like the one that we saw, which he had one attempt that I think is relevant, because I'm going to throw out the end, like, two scores down, interception.
Game was over, which, by that point.
Who cares? Especially since I think Mooney could have caught the ball, but that's neither here nor there. But so, the deep shot that he had to Mooney, or the drive before that, was off target, which you could describe as uncharacteristic, but all the short stuff where we needed to see Fields get better and we knew he was bad at since as early as Cincinnati-Cleveland, he looked way, way stronger in. I can't get enough of his blitz recognition. Somebody said this in the chat. I agree. His throw or go clock was awesome today. He didn't run for 100 yards on accident. At least five of those scrambles, one in particular that comes to mind, came from the pocket getting collapsed around him and him bouncing out of the pocket to race up the field for about 20 to 22 yards. I mean, he was awesome in areas that we needed to see him get better in. And at the very least, it left me really positive going forward for who he is going to be. Now, like you said, there were mistakes. We do not need to just glow and glow and glow and glow over a performance where he was 19 for 27 for 175 yards with four sacks. There are warts that still need to be ironed out. But if you're feeling like I am, it was just nice to see progress. Because that's the word here, right? It was progress in how he looks at the field, progress in how quickly his timer goes from I'm in the pocket to get the heck out. I mean, there was progress in how he managed the offense around him, progress in his anticipation throws here and there and everywhere. I mean, even if he's not fully scanning the field right now, at least he was making decisions faster. And that shows to me, at least, that he might be around the corner from really starting to put things together, though I'm trying to remind myself to be patient. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely saw the development there. And again, like you said, the short game, it was night and day difference from what we've seen in previous games. Like, you know, the Cleveland game, like, he could not make a quick read decision. It seems to save his life in that one. Like, he was like, ball wasn't getting out in time. And when it did get out in time, he was throwing it to the wrong guy. Like, not good. And then Tampa Bay Buccaneers game, like, you could definitely point out a couple of instances where he's slow to get the ball out, or he's reading the wrong side of the field. Like, not good stuff. This one today, it felt like every time they went to the quick game, he was making the right decision. He was doing it on time. And when nothing was there, like you said, he had that internal clock was a little bit faster in this one, to where he knew that, okay, nothing's there, I got to get out here and make a play or just get the ball out. And he did that. So again, we're seeing, and again, development's not a linear thing. There's going to be some valleys. There's going to be some ups and downs, basically. But this is definitely an upswing here today, and he just has to keep on building on these things. And, you know, the numbers, I feel like they undersell how well he played in this one. Like, the interception, forget about it. Like, don't worry about the interception. That wasn't – one, I don't think it's on him, because I think you mentioned this earlier. Darnell Mooney probably – should have caught that ball. I mean, it's a tough catch, but you expect a guy who the Bears expect to be their number one wide receiver, it seems, next year,
just
to catch that ball.
Just so I can make it said, because I don't expect him to catch the ball high pointing it at his fingertips. He just came to a full stop and then jumped as high as he could, and the ball got over him. And I find myself thinking that if he had just hit the brakes to 50% instead of to 10% speed, he might have had the ball fall into his shoulder. But I need to see the play again. Like, I don't think he should have caught it, like, exactly the same way, but it comes down to that. That's a tough catch. That would have been an amazing catch. I just think, to be clear, and who cares, that he might have hit the brakes a little too hard and ended up with a ball that floated over his head, not dissimilar to when you see an MLB outfielder attack a fly ball and then realize, oh, shoot, it's over me, and just flop backwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not saying it's like a flat-out drop or anything where it's like that's like an easy catch that any wide receiver should be able to make. Like, no, it's a tough play to make, but at the same time, like, the Bears are clearly angling Darnell Mooney to be their number one wide receiver right now and going into the future, it seems like, which – is a whole different discussion for another day. You know, with that said, if he's expected to be the number one guy, like, the number one guys in most offenses, like, they come down with that sort of play routinely. I'm not saying every single time, but, you know, it was whatever.
And it wouldn't have mattered. The Bears are down 2 scores. I think it's fair to say we've already now spent too many words on the least important play in this game, which, let's just move on from it, because it's a bummer for the box score, but that's it. Yep. That's literally it. But yeah, I mean, it's so funny that what looking through this game, I mean, there were other positives. For instance, credit to Larry Borum, who I didn't notice at all. Like, I didn't hear his name called. I didn't see his name or, like, see him at all. I mean, I saw 75 out there on the field, but there was nothing that really, like, you saw and needed to feel like you would comment about. And the only time that the Bears gave up a sack on the right side was when, for some reason, we decided to put Alex Bars in, who lines up and immediately just gets shredded. I mean, the Bears are still having issues running the ball to the right-hand side. Man, they got cooked a couple times when they would just try to, especially in the back half of the game. But to the rookie fifth-rounder's credit, he came off of IR, had roughly the usual 3 days of practice, with like 2 of those being walkthroughs, and came out against the 49ers and held his own. So I feel like he and Herbert deserve subsequent hat tips. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, you know, Herbert had another nice game again, showing that juice that he has. Like, Herbert looks like a player, and he was a nice find in the sixth round for them. Like, there were a lot of draft picks that were very high in him in the draft process. I kind of overlooked him a little bit when I was kind of scouting running backs. Like, I normally don't really go that in depth on running backs, because their running backs. Like, you can just find a guy. Right. But clearly the Bears, they found somebody here. Like, Khalil Herbert looks really good. I'm excited to see this running back duo once they get David Montgomery back healthy and to see what they do with the carries and how they split their snaps once they have those guys once you punch. But, yeah, Larry Borum, I thought he played a solid game. You know, again, like you said, it's always a positive for an offensive lineman when you don't hear their name called too much or when you don't obviously notice them. Because usually when you obviously notice them, either they're making a pancake block, like we've seen Jason Peters do a couple of times this year, or James Daniels even in that Raiders game, or they're just getting beat really badly. And we didn't see really any of that today. So that's certainly positive. Like, I think Larry Borum, wasn't he coming off like a high ankle sprain or something like that? Like, it was some kind of lower body injury where you wouldn't expect a guy to come back and look like that good, you know, that early on, especially with the limited practice he had. So Borum, he looks solid out there. Again, I'll have to see how he actually was on a snap to snap basis right. When I look at the tape, obviously. So, but immediate thoughts right now, like Borum, you didn't notice him out there. So obviously that means he's not being terrible.
Sure.
Being too terrible.
Coming off of,
that's a positive.
It's so key that I make sure that we mention, yes, the 49ers aren't Tampa Bay, but like we're coming off of a game where somebody in a similar position to Borum, Simmons had 3 years experience, 2 years experience in the NFL, if you count this as his second year, but he had no practice. And Borum comes off of IR with almost no net training camp practice and 3 days of walkthroughs. I would put the two in a mentally similar place, and Simmons got a zero from PFF as his blocking grade, which you don't have to even like PFF. They gave him a zero. You get 60 points for not being on the field. Like, he was considered that bad. So credit to Borum. I mean, that first watch matters. You know, again, when you go through the All-22, you can get a little nitpicky. I do it. You do it. That's how it works, right? Because you're trying to find, for instance, like, the reason that you get nitpicky is because on that 80-yard screen, now all I've seen is a couple replays and the dots thing, right? With everybody running around on the dots field. That play is one of the most beautifully blocked up screen passes I've ever seen. I want to pin it on, oh, Eddie Jackson wasn't there. I want to pin it on, oh, somebody blew a tackle, or so on and so forth. But that play, they get a center 25 yards downfield who blocks Tez Tabor, who's trying to cut the play off. I mean, they were just, that's why you get nitpicky, is so that twice a game, maybe, all 11 guys just nail their assignments absolutely flawlessly, and something that should be like 9 yards ends up almost in the end zone. But getting back to Borum, I do think that that live first impression carries some weight. We didn't see him as a problem in the game. If anything, I thought from a pass protection perspective, he looked better than Peters, who got confused a couple times on different stunts here and there. But we don't need to say anything bad about the guy who walked in and more or less restabilized the Bears' offensive line, and I think you know that.
He's saved their season to a degree, because I can't, like, their offensive line situation has been bad all year long, but I can't imagine how bad it would be if they just didn't find Jason Peters fishing on a boat somewhere and say, hey, do you want to come play football this year? And he's like, yeah, I'll collect a couple million dollars here, mm-hmm. play some football. It's just, yeah, the whole Borum situation, you know, again, for a fifth round pick, my expectations were always for him coming out of the draft that if he can develop into a solid positive as a swing tackle, that's, you nailed the pick. Like, you hit a home run in the fifth round. Like, tackles are hard to find anyway.
Yeah.
It's even difficult to find a quality starter like in day one, day two of the draft, let alone on day three. So my expectations were always, if he's a solid swing guy, you got something there. If he is anything more than that, then home run pick right there. So the fact that he could come in and was solid enough to where we're not talking about him as a problem like Latavius Simmons was last week, definitely a positive for Borum moving forward. And we'll just have to see how he develops moving forward, because I think he's going to get a lot of playing time here down the stretch of this season, because he's going to have to, because I don't know who else they can throw out there that's going to be any good. So yep.
And
we're going to see a lot of Borum this year.
Oh, yeah. And before we get off into defense, it's coming. Just – Just know it is.
Does it have to? Yeah, it does.
Let's throw a couple more hat tips out there. We can just go back and forth. I feel like we didn't talk enough about the 4th-and-1 conversion. I don't want to gloss over one of the funnest plays I've watched in a long dadgum time as Justin Fields took the ball. I couldn't tell first glance whether it's just a designed QB run. I really have no idea because it looked like there might be an option tag or a throwing part, but he breaks 2 tackles, finds his way to the back end of the play. Credit to Mooney, credit to Peters, credit to basically the whole offensive line. I think Cole Kmet was in there. They kept blocking. They somehow believed Justin Fields might pull it off after the 2nd one and turned a 4th-and-1 loss of 5 into a touchdown. Another guy that I will talk about, we've talked a little bit about Herbert. There were so many moments where I saw Herbert, he's going to be down at the line of scrimmage. Nope, he's not. He gained 9 yards. He would just snap tackles in an instant. And normally, that's not the job of your outside zone running back that just picks the right hole and goes. But to the 49ers defense credit, they pretty much plugged the Bears running game all together, and it was broken tackles and broken tackles alone that I feel like turned what should have been maybe a 30-yard day into a 77-yard day with a lot of key first down conversions. So I'll talk about those two. Is there anybody specifically that you want to call out as I thought they played pretty well?
It's tough on the initial watch. Like, I can go all day on Justin Fields and Khalil Herbert. That's kind of the problem with this offense. It's just that, like, there's not enough playmakers out here to really call out, unfortunately. You know, I'll say this, Jesse James, he had a really good game in this one. Like, I kind of threw this joke out there on Twitter, like throughout the game, that Jesse James, tight end one.
Come on. You and I both know that's a cheap shot.
I try not to go there too often, but yeah, no, just having some fun with it. But you know, he had a good game. And, you know, I'll even say Cole Kmet had a couple of nice plays. Like, I know a lot of people are going to give him crap for that. I guess technically it's a drop touch. I don't think it's a drop touchdown that he had earlier in the game, but I thought he was getting held on that play. But you know, he had a couple of nice catches here and there. You know, I thought he did a good job sealing the edge on some of those play action bootleg concepts that they ran that were successful in this game. So Kmet, he was solid for what they asked him to do in this game, but I'd say Jesse James was definitely the other, you know, definitely showed out in this one. You can tell that him and Justin Fields just have an innate connection together, and we saw that on that touchdown that he had, that, you know, Justin Fields trusted Jesse James to make the play in a tight window there, and Jesse James made a great catch on that play. Like, mm-hmm. Like the throw was going to get all the attention on that one, which it should, yep. Because Justin Fields made a ridiculous throw there. Yep. But I don't want to gloss over just Jesse James making a great catch as well. Full extension, diving in a tough area to get the ball. James looked pretty good at this game. So I got to give him credit there. And, you know, I'll just go back to that 4th-and-1 play to kind of end my thoughts here on this, on the offense, because, you know, I know we got to get to, unfortunately, this defense here. But, you know, the fact that Justin Fields breaking that first tackle, I think that was Bosa where he broke the tackle on initially. So, tough guy to get around because Bosa is just an animal in space. When he gets an opportunity to get you in space, he's going to get you down more often than not. So for him to escape that first tackle and then run across the grain, like that was just really fun stuff right there. Like I said before, I was like laughing the entire time because it was just so fun to watch. And
right.
We don't normally see that as Bears fans. So that was just a fantastic play, and I'm hoping that we get to see more of that going forward, because by all means that play should not have worked. Like, the game should have been over then once he messed up that play right there. And for him to pull a rabbit out of his hat like that, that's why you trade up in the draft to go get that guy, because, you know, 33% of the time the play call, whether it's a design failure, whether the defense just wins on the play, or whether, you know, you get an execution failure, 33% of the time the play call just isn't going to work, just flat out, you know, even for a good play caller.
Right.
It's just not going to work. It's bound to happen. And we saw it happen on that play. And sometimes you need a guy to be special and make something out of nothing for you. And that's what Justin Fields did on that play. Yep. So, you know, hats off to him, because that was just phenomenal. And I'm hoping that we get to see more of that.
Yep. If there's one player that you mentioned him, I feel like I have to say it, right? Because Cole Kmet got picked with Antoine Winfield on the board. Everybody knows it, right? And as Eddie Jackson's, you know, in some cases he's been over-criticized, I think, but I'm also one of his biggest fans, so I'll take whatever comes my way. That's fine. But the point is that Cole Kmet comes in as a pick that I don't think is ever going to be a true home run, you know? And so Jalen Johnson's his draft mate, which doesn't help him because Jalen Johnson might be a CB1. But to your point, I mean, Cole Kmet has come along as a blocker in a way I don't think anybody really anticipated him to. Like, not just a pass protection blocker, but a run, like a run action blocker as well. Cole's doing his job is as a Y tight end, I think, better than was anticipated. Now, if there's one area I want to see him grow, it's that, especially in the end zone, Cole doesn't seem to have the balance right about how physical he can be to make sure that when his left arm gets deliberately held on that touchdown catch, he draws the call. Like, we could call it a bad call, but we've now seen this two or three times with Kmet where he, I don't know if he's overly physical. I watched the play twice, but he didn't get the flag on something where he was reaching out with only one arm. So clearly, usually in those moments, the referee thought that he was borderline OPI one way and just sort of let the defender have it when he holds onto his arm. So I would love to see him run that route better or figure that balance out. Because we've seen too many tight ends make catches off of that exact kind of ISO route. But even there, I honestly feel like Kmet, he's at the stage where if the wide receivers can play a stronger game, he will eat up yards underneath. As much as you might talk about how funny it is to say this is a compliment, number 85 is a freight train when he's got the ball in his hands. So if you can give him that ability to ramp on up to full speed, he's going to produce for you. Again, it's the Heath Miller, it's the Jason Witten, it's the Kyle Rudolph, it's the tight end that doesn't feel good, but they're good. Does that make sense? Like, it's boring production. It's not fantasy, it's not Zach Ertz, it's not even Desmond Clark. But if he could figure out how to be that red zone threat, because dadgummit, I thought that throw was well anticipated, well placed, gave only his guy a shot at it, and then Kmet only had one arm on it and without a call. That's something I would love to see. I'm not going to pin it on Kmet. Obviously, those things can go a lot of different ways, but man, if he could just figure out that one spot, he may actually live up to that second round billing. Ooh, barely, but like single, maybe a double. Does that make sense? Am I being too high on the kid?
No, it makes sense. Like, again, we can go back and forth on whether he was worthy of that selection in the second round. Like, just full disclosure, like, I never thought he was worth the second round pick. I saw him as a third round guy throughout the entire process. I just did not see him as a second round type of a talent, that tight end spot. But, you know, for him to be worthy of that pick, like, you know, doing some of the things like you mentioned, where his blocking has been a lot better than I expected.
He was one-on-one Bosa, right?
Yeah. He had a couple of good reps there in this one. So, we've seen him in the run game, be a nice contributor in the run game. So doing some of those things, like, again, we can talk about, you know, the value of drafting a blocking tight end in the second round all we want, but that doesn't mean like Cole Kmet can't be a quality contributor on this offense. And, you know, we saw today that he was a quality contributor for this offense. Again, outside of that potential touchdown he could have had there, like, again, that's something to where I feel like there probably was a missed call on that one because he was getting grabbed. Mm-hmm. So, again, you have to be fair with the evaluation. Again, I'll always be on the side of, you know, he was probably never going to be worth the pick. But that doesn't mean he can't be a solid contributor for this offense and be a nice starter for them moving forward. Because if he can be then you can live with it. You can live with a pick if he's a solid, you know, complementary option in the passing game, contributes as a blocker. Like, you can live with all that stuff. And I think we saw today that Cole Kmet, we've seen him take a few strides here in terms of being that type of player.
Mm-hmm. He's in his second year. Tight end is notoriously long to develop. If I sound like I'm being overly praiseworthy, it's because I can leave it to literally anybody else in the Bearsosphere to just trash the kid for at this point being on pace. I think somebody did the math for a 500 yard receiving season. So I don't know. I'll have to take another look at it, obviously. But either way, we've unfortunately hit the end of the positive road. It's time to turn into negative Nellies after the break. So we will let the sponsors get their word in, and we will be back with the bad end of a 33-22 loss.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we are back with Bear With Me. I'm here with Bear Report's Andrew Freeman as we're going through the Bears' tough home loss to the San Francisco 49ers that drops them to 3-5. And Andrew, I think you know it. The 49ers, who if memory served, didn't punt one time throughout this game, had their way offensively. And it felt like it might work out as in the early parts of the game. But boy, oh boy, as soon as Justin Fields scored that heroic 4th-and-1 touchdown, the 49ers hit all gas with no breaks. It wasn't just chunk, or it wasn't just singular, oh wow, that got more than it should have plays. It wasn't the 50-yard bomb that Fildor might have covered. It wasn't the 80-yard screen that was perfectly blocked up. It was just 10 yards, 25 yards, 10 yards. 8 yards, free and easy touchdown run by Jimmy Garoppolo, who had 2 touchdowns for crying out loud, rushing on the day. What'd you think of the defensive performance?
Not a lot of good. And how do you let Jimmy Garoppolo, of all people, get 2 rushing touchdowns on you? Like, that's just a whole level, new level of bad for this defense. And like they again, I feel like, you know, with this defense, it's tough because they were built to be a front 7 dominant defense that hopefully they can dominate with the pass rush, they can stop the run, and hopefully that can cover up a relatively – okay, let's just say that right now. They're a talentless defensive backfield right now, or secondary, I should say. They have one quality corner in Jalen Johnson, and Eddie Jackson is, I would say, their only starter-level safety right now. There just isn't enough talent in the secondary to where if your pass rush isn't getting home, they're not going to hold up. And we saw that today. And the most concerning thing is the run defense in this one. Like, the run defense has just fallen off a cliff, I feel like, after, you know, I thought they started off pretty well over the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season, but the last 3 weeks, man, they've been really bad. I think 3 straight games of giving up over 100 yards rushing. And again, this one is a little bit different because the 49ers, you have Kyle Shanahan calling the plays. They're an offensive line that's built to run the ball effectively. And they're a system that they typically can turn out 100-yard games like nothing. That's what the 49ers do. They love to run the ball. Shanahan's a genius when it comes to scheming up a run game. Like, I expected them to give up some yards in this one. But, I mean, late in the game, like, the 49ers were able to get everything they wanted late in the game down the stretch there. And there's just nothing the Bears can do. And, I mean, they were clearly missing the presence that Khalil Mack had. I mean, more so in the passing game, I felt like the pass rush did nothing in this game. And like that was a problem for them last week too, as well. So I mean, you kind of get the feeling that their early success, especially, you know, that Raiders game, the Bengals game, some of the success they had earlier in the year, that it might have just been smoke and mirrors from Sean Desai just scheming up ways to get the most out of this unit that, if we're being honest, just doesn't have a ton of talent on it. And that's kind of the unfortunate part, because as Bears fans, like, we love our defense, obviously, right? And we're used to seeing a talented defense carrying a poor to mediocre offense at best. And that's not what we have right now. This Bears defense is average at best, in my opinion. You know, they're going to have some games where they get the right matchup and the pass rush is going to dominate out there, and it's going to look really good. But they're going to have other weeks where if the pass rush isn't getting home, it's going to be a lot like what we saw today. And it could have been a lot worse because, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on Jimmy Garoppolo, but I don't think he's very good, like, at all. And he certainly hasn't had the strongest season up to date so far. And there are definitely a lot of plays that he left on the field in this game as well. And for him to, when it seemed like he was getting big plays left and right late in this game, you know, he had that one big play to Deebo Samuel, I think it was, before the end of the first half, where he hit that big deep shot in the 2-minute drill. That was just a play where, you know, one, why you're letting Kendall Vildor be one-on-one with Deebo Samuel with no safety help in a situation like that wasn't very good. And yeah, from there, like, again, it's very frustrating to see the defensive line that is, you know, it's one of the most expensive defensive lines in the NFL. It's one of the most quote unquote talented defensive lines in the NFL. Like, there certainly is talent on the defensive line. I'm not going to say they aren't talented. They are a talented unit, but for them to get just pushed around like that late in the game, it was just very disheartening.
Yep.
To say the least.
I mean, I'll tell you with a straight face, I thought Hicks played really well. That guy is hilariously just, what's the word? He's so intense, and he's such an impact, whether it's chasing down plays 20 yards downfield as a defensive lineman or fighting his way for some pressure. I would not tell you that Hicks is the same, like, utterly unbelievable player that he was in 2018, where I would tell you with a straight face he belonged in the same conversation as Aaron Donald. But he is the heart and soul of a defense that pays three, soon to be four, more defenders more than him. But Nichols is starting to feel like a fifth rounder. Well, actually, he'll never feel like a fifth rounder because fifth round DLs are not that good. But even so, I mean, this DL is supposed to be defensive line more talented than it was. But I think what hurts me the most is, so I've been really obnoxious, and I'm about to continue to be obnoxious about the importance of Eddie Jackson. And he went down with what looked like it could have been, gosh, I hope it's just a pulled hamstring, but it looked like it could be worse than that early in this game. And immediately the Bears just started getting destroyed in the secondary. And you could point, you could say, well, I mean, it wasn't as if the safety was going to fix it. It's not like I saw Tease Tabor out of position, and you'd be right. But when I look at this defense, what I think was the hardest part, and it really finally clicked when Tabor went into the game, is that what Desai has been able to do with Eddie Jackson is put him anywhere to where the defense or the offense doesn't really know where he's going to be on any given play. Eddie's up at the line. He drops back into center field or cover three safety. Eddie's in cover two. Now he's up at the line. Now he's helping a linebacker. Now he's over here. Like, Eddie moves so much that we got used to saying Duke Shelley, Danny Trevathan, Alec Ogletree, Kendall Vildor, Travis Gibson, they're all really good in coverage, obviously, because Eddie's just sort of floating around, missing tackles. This is the narrative. And we keep holding people to some of their worst passing performances of the year. How are we doing it? Well, he goes out, and suddenly the Bears' coverages, you could read them like a book. You could set up any play knowing, okay, so they got cover three. Let's send somebody at Tease Tabor. We're going to pull him over and get Deebo Samuel one-on-one against a corner playing outside leverage for a 50-plus yard bomb. I mean, there were so many little gains, whether it was the intermediate game, the true deep game. I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo is an extraordinary quarterback, but I do think that they made the day really easy for him. And I don't know how much, like, I can't wait to see the All-22 because it did feel like they basically got really transparent about their defense, partially because they lost number four. But man, all of a sudden, it was Jalen Johnson and a bunch of weak coverage players up against Deebo Samuel and guys that could beat them one-on-one. I mean, when George Kittle's backup tight end beat Danny Trevathan 3rd-and-8 in an ISO route, that was where it was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. I get what you're saying with that in terms of, you know, Eddie Jackson, his presence helping out the rest of the secondary, because, you know, I agree with you to an extent that, you know, Eddie Jackson, while he's not living up to, I think, his label as one of the better safeties in the game that he's being paid as right now, because he's certainly not where he was in 2018 and even to a lesser extent 2019, where he was definitely like absolutely one of the better coverage safeties in the NFL. Like, there's no doubt about it. Like, Eddie Jackson was truly a great player during that time period. I'm not sure he's playing at that level still, but I don't think it's nearly as bad as where you have guys out there saying that, you know, like Eddie Jackson, like he's should be like a backup safety, or, you know, DeAndre Houston Carson is currently the best Bears safety on the Bears roster. Like, I forget all that stuff. Like, Eddie Jackson, he's still a quality starter in the NFL right now. He's just probably not a guy worth the price tag that he's currently being paid right now. And he's probably just not that 2018 season is probably just an outlier for a guy that's a solid player, but just not quite the elite great player that he's being paid to be right now. So you have to have that fair expectations of, you know, the balance of, you know, what are our expectations for him and how is he actually playing and what can we evaluate from that? So I think Eddie Jackson, because of the fact that the Bears, I think the bigger issue is that they just don't have enough talent elsewhere on their secondary to where if one guy goes down, like if Eddie Jackson does go down, it hurts the rest of the defense so much, because like you said, with a guy like Eddie Jackson, he's versatile enough to where you can do a bunch of stuff with him coverage wise. And that just makes things a little bit difficult for quarterbacks. And that gives them that extra quick, you know, split second to process things where it allows a pass rush to maybe get home. And we were certainly able to see that early around the season. And when Eddie Jackson went down, I think, you know, we'll see again when the All-22 comes up and we can actually analyze what was going on in the game, schematically speaking. You know, I can definitely see it where it was just a little bit easier for Jimmy Garoppolo to sit back there and say, okay, I know where I'm getting pre-snap. Now I know what the defense is going to be. And if I'm getting that look, I can just make the quick out to, you know, Deebo Samuel, and then we'll get a quick, easy completion right there. And it just seems like everything in the secondary was just coming way too easy for Jimmy Garoppolo. And again, there were a couple plays early in the game where you saw that, you know, a couple of drops from the 49ers wide receivers, a couple of bad balls from Jimmy Garoppolo. Like I said before, like this could have been a lot worse for this defense here because there was not a lot of tight coverage going on in this one. And even in the instances where Jalen Johnson, like he had that great play in the end zone, Jalen Johnson did, where he had that pass deflection. I think it was on a second down where Jimmy Garoppolo got his first touchdown. The play before that, Jalen Johnson made a fantastic play in the end zone to get that pass deflection. But even Jalen Johnson, again, and this is the life of a cornerback, like every cornerback's going to get beat. And we certainly saw that a couple times with Jalen Johnson against Deebo Samuel, where he got beat. And that's just bound to happen. Samuel's been beating a bunch of really good corners all year long. Like, that's not a knock against Jalen Johnson, but, you know, that's the problem. You don't have anybody else that can cover, you know, for you. It just creates so many problems. And it goes back to, I don't want to talk about like the whole, you know, Ryan Pace and his job here with the Bears and constructing this roster, but it goes back to when you totally make an effort to, we're going to, you know, beef up the trenches as much as possible. And, you know, we're keeping guys like Jimmy Graham on the roster, and, you know, we're kicking a bunch of money in the future on guys that we probably should just be getting rid of. Like, it doesn't allow you to properly invest in the secondary the way you need to for the modern NFL game. And we saw that turn its ugly head once again. And, you know, it's frustrating, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I think the worst part about this is that we could talk about the coverage, and I tend to think – we have. Everybody saw that the Bears coverage got carved up. You know what I mean? Especially when... So, the bright side about a safety, because somebody said in the chat that Eddie Jackson right now is, in their words, slumming it in the Hall of Very Good. I like that. That's a good way to put it. I don't know if Eddie Jackson's really ever going to be elite. I think safeties, kind of like running backs, are a product of the defense in front of them, just like running backs are a product of the scheme in front of them when it comes to their own individual production. But what I will tell you is that the Bears had one good corner and one good safety, and the safety could move around and you knew where the corner was probably going to be. And now they have one good corner and a bunch of guys. We saw it. We could talk about it more, but I feel like we would just be talking about Duke Shelley being a sixth round pick that never looked particularly good. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff we would say that doesn't hit to the point that I think might matter the most, which was we didn't have Khalil Mack. Now Eddie Jackson's out. This is the game you needed a lot from Roquan Smith. And I felt like the Bears got nothing. Like, Roquan got removed from the running game. He missed a couple tackles later in the game, but the real key is the 49ers started just pounding the ball because they were running a really nice gap scheme that was doing what it could to basically remove the impact of the interior defensive line that had stuffed a bunch of runs early in the game. And you needed 58 and 6, because Trevathan started most of the game, to really come through for you here. And I just didn't see what I think I would have wanted to see out of a defender who is trying to get paid $20 million. Like, trying to put that number into context compared to Fred Warner, who I felt like was everywhere, it felt to me like the difference couldn't have been more clear. And I like Roquan. I think Roquan's a really good coverage linebacker. I think he's hard to find. I think he is a legitimately talented player. But this was one of those moments where I felt as if maybe you spend that money on receiver instead. But I don't know. I'm sure there are plenty of people that are going to be like, whoa, what are you talking about? And I get that. It is an overreaction to just one football game, I'll be honest. But this was a game where we got to see what it would look like if Roquan Smith was the Bears' best player on defense. And I did not feel like it looked good. What did you think?
Yeah, the Roquan discussions is fascinating because linebacker in general, it's a position to where I feel like you can get by with just below average to just average linebacker play and still have good defense in the modern NFL. Like, it's just a weird position. But like you said, if you have a guy like Roquan who is a true, I wouldn't say weapon in the passing game as a defensive player, but a guy that can truly shut down guys in pass coverage and make an impact there, like, it's very rare to find linebackers that are as good in coverage as Roquan is, and his speed sounding silent in the run game is an asset. We saw even a couple of zone plays in this game where his speed silent the sideline, when you can keep him clean, he's one of the best in the NFL getting silent sideline and just making plays in the run game there. So Roquan is still a great player. I think he's easily a top 10 linebacker. I think probably even top five. He's right up there with, I'm not sure if he's in the elite tier with guys like Bobby Wagner, Lavonte David, Fred Warner. Certainly, I mean, like you said, for Fred Warner, he's one of the best out there. I think Roquan's right behind him in that second tier where he's a great player, probably just not the elite guy right now. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, what we saw late in the game. You know, Roquan, again, when you can keep him clean, he is great. Like, he is, his speed and his instincts are on a whole nother level, but he has zero ability to shed a block, unfortunately. And that's kind of the big knock on him, is that, like, again, he's the guy, a little bit of a shorter, stockier stature, shorter arms. Like, that was the profile of him coming out of Georgia. You know, everyone knew that his speed and his instincts were off the charts. Like, everyone knew that was going to make him, absolutely, even if he's not great at taking on blocks, like, he's going to be a quality impact player because of those traits that he has. And he's combined that with his coverage ability, his technique, where I noticed him a couple of times shutting down guys in coverage and making things a little bit more difficult. Like, he had this one play where, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo had a completion on this play where he stuffed out a slant in the slot, and Jimmy Garoppolo was looking there right away, and he saw, oh, nope, Roquan's right there. He's going to intercept that. I have to get out of here and make a play. Like, those are the type of stuff that Roquan can do because he is so smart and he's so quick moving sideline to sideline. He can take things away that you normally can't from other linebackers. So we have to keep that in context. But, I mean, when you get to the point where it's time to stop the run and get a stop in the running game because teams are trying to burn some clock near the end of the game, that's not really Roquan's, that's not his specialty. He's a guy where he's built for the modern NFL game in terms of defending the pass, but going up teams that can really grind you in the run game and get to the second level, get to the linebackers a little bit, he's going to struggle because, again, like I said, he isn't a guy that can take on blocks particularly well. And we saw that a few times in this game. So I'm not going to try to take away anything from Roquan. I want to see him be a Bear long term. I think he's definitely worth that top tier linebacker contract just because I feel like, for goodness sake, it's Ryan Pace's like only good first round pick other than Justin Fields. So, like, you got to reward the guy, it seems like. But yeah, it's interesting. I see where you're coming from.
No, you got me. I'm trying to find a moment to jump in and walk a little bit back and just be like, I feel like I am sounding like I hate Roquan Smith, and that's not the case, right?
Oh, no, I'm not going that far with this. No, I'm just saying.
The trouble is that exactly like your scouting report just said, right? Roquan is a phenomenal player when he's kept clean. If you, like the 2018 defense, keep Roquan Smith clean, even like the 2020 defense at times, it's going to be Roquan who makes all the impact plays. There he is on a sack. There he is on a fourth and down runs or fourth and one run stop. There he is denying a lateral out. There he is blowing up a screen. It's just him freaking everywhere, all over the place. He can do that. The trouble is, and now I'm putting on my capologist hat and getting away from a game preview, so feel free to just slow this train down if you want to. But the trouble is that money that he's currently being offered as a first-round pick, as basically Pace's only real successful first-round pick, and we're not going to count Justin Fields yet because we know we've got to evaluate everything off of a two-year window. Like, Roquan's going to get the money of a do-it-all linebacker that needs help from the front end. Like, he needs high-paid guys in front of him, really talented guys in front of him that are able to keep him clean. And I think it's just that my brain wants a linebacker that can do it themselves, and Roquan is a linebacker that needs to be put in position to succeed. And if he doesn't have that core around him to do it, he's going to end up blocked, and a running back's going to end up 50 yards downfield. I mean, there's a lot of truth to that, you know? And we'll see what things look like, but I know this was a game I wanted him to come up big in, and I don't feel like he did, but it's not like Roquan is at fault. I think you'd agree there. Like, Danny Trevathan, Duke Shelley, I thought Kendall Vildor did not have a phenomenal game. He's a fifth-round pick. Expectations for him shouldn't be too crazy. I feel like he should still be cornerback 3, cornerback 4, or a nickel corner, like, in a normal situation. But here he is starting CB2, and they let him man up Deebo Samuel, and it went about as well as we thought it would. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the bottom line, look, I know you're not hating on Roquan Smith. Like, we both love Roquan Smith. Like, right. let's make that clear to your listeners here. Like, I get what you're saying. And again, from the capologist standpoint, like, I understand exactly the point you're saying, because I've been looking at the cap sheet way too much over the past couple weeks. Because I'm already looking ahead to next offseason already. So I'm with you there that it's going to be a decision that the Bears are going to have to make. But yeah, let's be clear here. There are way more issues on this Bears defense than, you know, Roquan Smith not being able to take on blocks. Like, again, that's an issue for Roquan Smith, but in terms of the overall defense, the problem with the overall Bears defense right now is that they have no talent in the secondary, and that the defensive line, when they're injured and banged up and they're not as impactful as they need to be, that's just, they can get carved up way too easily. That's the biggest issue. And, yep. And that comes down to, you have way too many older guys. This defense is just getting older, and they just haven't been able to replenish the talent on that side of the ball. I think the way that, you know, it's, I won't say that it's nearly where it was, you know, near, because remember, near the end of like the Lovie Smith era going into the Mark Trestman years, like, the defense, like, for so long, they were so old at that point. They just did not replenish the talent on that side of the ball, that when finally some of those, you know, veteran guys, you know, hit a cliff and just fell off the face of the earth, like, yep, you saw it, like, the lack of talent across the roster was apparent. I'm not saying we're at that point yet with some of these veterans on this current roster, and they still have some young players to build around here, like Roquan, Jalen Johnson. Like, they still have some guys that can play that are young on this defense, on this defensive side of the ball. But it's getting to that point where, you know, Khalil Mack's above the age of 30, Robert Quinn's over 30, Keem Hicks is over 30, Eddie Goldman's not the same player he once was. I feel like, for me, where he was in 2018, where he was maybe the most dominant nose tackle in football, he's not that same guy anymore.
Right.
You know, Eddie Jackson's regressed back to the mean, and you don't have guys like Bryce Callahan on this roster that are, nope, really good in the slot. You don't have an Adrian Amos that just, that really sound safety that can cover up some of your mistakes and you know, be that last line of defense. Like, you don't have that on this roster. And when guys like, you know, Bilal Nichols, his development, it seems like it's kind of slowing down a little bit. Like, he hasn't been, I think, as impactful as we kind of wanted him to see. Like, Nichols is a solid role player, and he's good for a fifth-round pick, but he's not, you know, the more and more I watch him play, I don't see a guy that is a foundational piece of this defense moving forward. And the more I see of him, the more I'm comfortable, you know, letting some other team pay him on a second contract if that makes sense. Because I mean, like you said, they got to start reserving some money to get some dang receivers on this team, because that's where they need the most help, I think, going forward. And unfortunately, I think we're going to see a point where this defense, you know, they're going to still have a lot of great players on it, but they're going to be getting older. And I think this is something for the short term and for over the next couple of years, expect a lot more defensive performances like this, because, you know, I think Sean Desai is doing a good job, but there's only so much you can cover up with smoke and mirrors when
right.
there are just so many holes all over the place. And
oh, yeah.
Defense is a unit to where it's a side of the ball to where, you know, it's great if you have a couple of great players, but it's more so about the fact that great defenses don't have any holes on them.
Right.
And when you have holes everywhere and it's very leaky like that, that's going to be a problematic. And that's what 100%. We're seeing.
Another thing I think is hard about defense. So what is it? The trade deadline is on my birthday, November 3rd, if memory serves. Correct me there. I that is correct, right?
It's either November 3rd or November 2nd. It's one of those 2 days.
Okay.
You're close.
But so either way, that means that we've got a few days before the trade deadline happens, and the Bears just dipped below 500 at a really key time because they had the chance to even the record. They didn't. But so the key here is, obviously the Bears aren't going to fire sale. You're not going to hear me say they should. But I think the trouble for this team going forward, as a pronounced Eddie Jackson stan, I don't think most of the defenders on this team absolutely have to be here, because I want to see the offense get fixed before we even think about defense. My thought is that there's always an Adrian Amos out there. It's easier to find a late round, really good safety off of quality scouting, because again, scheme is a ton of a safety's success, than it is to necessarily pick your safety and build from there. Like, I would tell you that I think safety is an important defensive position in the NFL, and it also might qualify as icing. Like, when you think of the cake foundation, like, where is the cake? Your cake is your corners. Your cake is probably your interior defensive linemen. Your cake is, in large part, your edge rushers. Like, if you get those right, you can kind of figure it out at safety and inside linebacker in a lot of defenses. And I don't know if by the time the Bears have their offense figured out, almost any of these defensive players aren't going to suffer a massive aging drop-off or injury problem. So if the Bears did make a move, I think I hope it would be a small sale, whether it's we sell Robert Quinn really high or we trade. Honestly, you could trade Eddie Jackson, and I think I'd live with it, because the Bears are 3-5 right now, and I don't know where they get better. Like, maybe they beat Pittsburgh. Great. Maybe they, I don't know, magically beat Baltimore, though that seems unlikely. They'll probably beat Detroit. But where does the key 8th, 9th, 10th win come from that makes me feel so good about this team that I think they could win a playoff game against a 1 seed? You know what I mean? Like, the trouble here is this game, at least for me, really solidified that this team is not going anywhere. And that's brutal, right? Because the positive part is in the future they might, if they take a future attitude. If Ryan Pace doesn't trade away the 2022 third rounder so that he can grab Mohamed Sanu or something like that. Like, if we don't make that move, the Bears could end up good sooner than we know it. But, dadgummit, I don't think they will. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you're asking Ryan Pace to go against his nature here, which is to not be aggressive and to not... Because here's the problem with this current regime. One, they're playing for their jobs right now. Like Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, this coaching staff, like if they don't show growth this year in offense and if they don't win enough games this year, like they're gone. So while I agree 100% with you, like they need to start thinking long term here and they need to start selling off some of these older assets. Like I don't think Robert Quinn's or Eddie Jackson is going to be in the picture just because of their contract structure. Like they're giving up way too much dead money this year to be able to make that reasonably work, I feel like. But I mean, you look at guys like Akeem Hicks, like you can get out of that deal pretty easily. Like even going into the offensive side of the ball, like what's the point of keeping Allen Robinson on the roster at $17 million if you're not going to even attempt to throw him the ball, it seems like. Like I'm so frustrated with that situation. And clearly Allen Robinson is frustrated with that situation because right. he seems like checked out at this point. Like, and I don't blame him because He's not being put into a position to see succeed. He doesn't have chemistry with Justin Fields right now, and they're clearly trying to phase him out of the offense, it seems like. So if, you know, what's the point of keeping a guy like Allen Robinson when I can tell you this much, like the Kansas City Chiefs could use another wide receiver on their team. The Baltimore Ravens could probably use another wide receiver. You know, the Colts could use another one. Like there are a bunch of teams across the league that could use a player with the talents of Allen Robinson for a playoff push, because I think in a better situation, I think he's still a baller, and it's just, it's a frustrating situation right now with him. But, you know, getting back to what you were saying here, like, you know, I would love to see not a fire sale, but like a full on, like, you know, think a little bit long-term, some long-term thinking moves. I just don't think we're going to see that, because Ryan Pace doesn't look at things long-term. He really, ever since 2018, he's never seen, he hasn't looked at anything from a long-term lens. It's always about, you know, we're going to push all of our chips to the table for this year, and we're going to try to, you know, take our best swing for this year and, you know, damn the future. We're going to, you know, worry about the future later. And now we're getting to the point where Ryan Pace doesn't care about the future, because he's probably, you know, if things don't go well this year, he might not be here in the future. So it's just, you know, you're asking, like, Ryan Pace is what he is as a GM, and this organization is where it is right now. And I would love to see some, you know, smart moves that has the future health of the organization in mind. But I can see the face you're making, Robert. Like, you know it, I know it. It's probably not going to happen, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, think about it, right? I don't know what the headspace of George McCaskey is as we wrap this game up, because I think we're at the point where we're asking the question, like, where do they go from here, right? Yeah. And the trouble is that, so Matt Nagy's team, whether he was there or not, lost a game after a COVID outbreak, which is not, I mean, it's kind of rare across the league, right? So, I don't know. Head coaches are kind of like presidents, right? They're responsible for everything. If, like, not to, please don't let this get political, but I know that whether it's the state of the economy, the state of foreign affairs, like, you could end up where England just randomly decided that they hated the United States of America, and that would fall on the president that happened to be there at the time, whether they did anything or not. And in the same way, head coaches kind of get pinned at everything, you know? And so the Bears lose a key game, and that may mean that Nagy's on the way out. And so if Nagy's on the way out, Pace is 0-2. On head coaches. I don't know how he's not on the way out. I get why he wants to be aggressive. He would like to remain employed as the general manager of the Chicago Bears. But this is where I wish the ownership was a little bit more football savvy, so that they could say, don't, please. Please don't. We're going to go in a different direction. And if you want to ride out the rest of your contract, you're going to do this, this, and that, and the other. But I don't think they know how to do that, right? So we end up with this team that I don't think, again, future trajectory. We might have a quarterback, and if we do, we're good. But the question is, can we be great? Are we going to be the 2015 to 2021 Seattle Seahawks good, or are we going to be really good or potentially great? I think the next couple months will obviously make that decision. I think, honestly, the trouble with Allen Robinson seems to me right now that the Bears decided that they were going to get Damir Bird, Marquise Goodwin, and Darnell Mooney to do all of their deep threat work, so that Allen Robinson would basically be a graduated Travis Kelce. And that's not a $17 million role, to say the least, nor is that Justin Fields' preferred target, period. You know, like, right now he's kind of struggling to fit holes over the middle, and Fred Warner may have been part of that. Sure, but it's not as if we're seeing the post routes that Mitch Trubisky had tons of success with. I mean, you could literally almost think of Justin Fields' throwing profile as the anti-Trubisky, and that's hilarious because Justin Fields and Allen Robinson have not gotten along at all. So I don't know if there's any, like, actual fundamental thing there, you know, but it definitely sticks out to me that the Bears don't use their two highest paid players on offense. Allen Robinson and Jimmy Graham. Like, the current roster construction is not good enough from a fundamental level to really go anywhere now or in the future. So we'll have to see what happens going forward, because I don't think this game looked good for Matt Nagy. If I turned my brain off and tried to get to, like, George McCaskey's did we win or did we lose, context is kind of unimportant mindset, this is not a good look. as the Bears lose to a 2-4 team. And I don't know. Any final thoughts as we dive into this?
Yeah, I mean, just like looking big picture here, I mean, I know George McCaskey is probably going to see this as a negative because it's another loss, win-loss record. And again, like we kind of said this earlier, this was probably a winnable game for this Bears team because this 49ers team, like you just said, they're 2-4. They're not very good. So in the short term, this was a tough loss to take. And you know, it brings about a whole bunch of questions that we're going to be trying to answer over the next, I don't know, whatever, however months we have left of the season to determine, you know, are the guys who are in charge the right guys in charge for this to help with Justin Fields and maximize his tenure with the Bears on his rookie contract moving forward. And, you know, I think we both kind of know what our answers are, Robert, but it remains to be seen whether the McCaskies will come to that answer and kind of, I guess, how would you say it, agree with us on that sentiment. But
I guess
in terms of like a positive takeaway here, like I'm going to end it on a positive here because that's, yeah, you know, that's the best way to go about it. I think we saw what we needed to see from Justin Fields today. And that's really all that matters in the grand scheme of things, because I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, if Justin Fields hits and if he's great, you know, this Bears team, regardless of who's in charge, regardless of the issues plaguing other parts of the roster, they're going to be relevant moving forward. And, you know, ideally you want to see them maximize Justin Fields on his rookie contract and be a really dang good team right away here. But if it's not in the cards, it's not in the cards. But all you can say is that if you find a great quarterback, you know, eventually it's going to happen and things are going to go right for you. And Justin Fields, he took that step forward today where it feels like we're getting closer to that point where we can say, you know, man, we got ourselves a quarterback. And, you know, if we can just get a few things in place here and there, we might have a chance here. And yep, that's really the most important thing.
I mean, I'll go all the way there. I will pick up your hell yeah torch and I will carry it. I mean, so I do think that sometimes we as Bears fans can get a little too focused on the rookie QB window when in reality, most of the teams that have ridden that rookie QB window have lost the Super Bowl. Like, it's been mostly Brady, which really skews the data. So if you do remove Brady, you've got like Nick Foles wins a Super Bowl. Ben Roethlisberger won 1 year ago. Aaron Rodgers never won it on his rookie deal. Like, at the end of the day, Fields played a really good game in his first game that wasn't pressuring him like crazy. And that's awesome news. That's the best news you could have gotten out of this week. The Bears lost, which is practically irrelevant because Justin Fields, number one, put up 100 yards rushing and 175 yards passing with 2 touchdowns before a desperate heave interception happened. I mean, you can spin the story however you want, but I thought from a down-to-down basis, he looked like he was clearly growing and moving in the right direction. That is great news as a Bears fan. Like, that's great. The question becomes, again, what happens from here? Because I think at the end of the day, what we've really learned is that Super Bowl rosters are truly Super Bowl rosters. It isn't as simple as saying that quarterback's better, thus they're going to win. The last time we really saw, I think, the worst roster lose was probably Mahomes beating San Francisco, which is not me coming down on the Chiefs roster. It's more to say that 49ers roster was absolutely loaded. But since then, we saw a loaded Tampa Bay win the Super Bowl because they should have. We saw years ago a Seattle team beat the Denver Broncos, who had lit the world on fire with offense. My Super Bowl memory is not that great because the Bears are never in it, so I'm really trying to work here. The 2017 Eagles were just a phenomenal roster, and they won the Super Bowl. So the question now moves from, at least I think, it moves from, is Justin Fields good? Which, hey, jury's out, and it's going to be out. We're not going to know from here. But down this backstretch, through November and December, what do the Bears do to get to the point where their roster is as complete as these true Super Bowl contenders? How do they take that step towards getting to where Cincinnati is going? That step to where even Dallas, honestly, is going. Tampa Bay is. The Chiefs are falling away from. Like, there are a whole lot of things that the Bears could do that I think don't involve robbing Peter to pay Paul. But if I sound negative about it, it's purely because this would be Pace bucking a trend he has established over an 8-year period. But hey, all it takes is 1 to 2 moves maybe, like in the front office, to potentially reset a brand new window with surrounding fields with all the tools that he might need. I don't know. It's easy to be really positive in the face of a loss because the Bears have a quarterback. It's also easy to be really negative, wondering what are they going to do? What wild overpay are they going to make now to try to fix it with one swing of the bat? This is the way I would describe it if it was baseball. We are down 5 runs, but we've got plenty of innings. So it's just a matter from here of making sure you don't try to win it all with one swing of the bat, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. All we can do now is just hope that Justin Fields continues to progress and develop throughout the course of the year, and the future will handle itself, hopefully. That's really all you can, you know, do from now from a mindset standpoint. This year is all about Justin Fields and his development, and again, today was a very nice step in the right direction for that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Andrew, thank you so much for jumping on and talking with me. Thanks for digesting this game with me. Where can folks find your work online and what do you have coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find my work online at the Bear Report. You can check that out. And, you know, in terms of where you can follow me on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at AJFreeman25. I like to, do a lot of interactions with fans on Twitter and certainly get a lot of content as well. One of the things that I'm working on this year is my Tracking the Trenches series, where I take a look at the pass rush and the pass protection for the Bears in each game. And I kind of, if you're into stats and if you're into talking about the trenches and all that stuff, I really enjoy putting that together. I kind of go through a pass rush win rate and pressures, and I break that all down for you guys there. You can also find me on the Bear Report YouTube channel. I do some film work as well for them on that as well. I know, Robert, you're one of the big guys on Bears Twitter when it comes to the film stuff. And, you know, I hope one day I can get to the level that the standard that you've set for yourself.
But you are too kind. All I do is watch the game, talk about it, and get a bunch of stuff wrong. So,
isn't that what it's all about, right? Like, right? At the end of the day, you can guess so much, but you know, there's so much that there's still so many intricacies of the game that I'm still trying to pick up. But I think at the end of the day, it's all about trying to, you know, make mistakes where you can and just learn from it and just continue to learn about that. But yeah, in terms of, you know, that stuff, definitely check that out if you're into some more film work and just looking at things from a different angle, because, you know, Robert, just, you do a great job with some of the stuff there. And yeah, definitely something that I have a lot of fun putting together. And if you're into that type of thing, definitely give that a follow.
And thank you for taking the trenches, by the way, because I know I tend to go towards skill position, defensive backs, coverage nets, and so on and so forth. And even then, I'm really not the ideal person to talk about it. But yeah, the Bears at this point, we move on, right? We're not there yet. Obviously, we've got 3 days of mourning before turnover on Thursday. But everybody get yourself ready for a Monday night football game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, coming off of a thrilling 15-10 win over Cleveland. So two teams with not the greatest offenses are going to go toe-to-toe on football's biggest stage. Can't wait. Andrew, thanks so much for joining me. And folks, thank you so much for bearing with me.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.